This episode of The Best of Humble and Fred is brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, PayTM, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Strain Print.
You're listening to the legendary Humble and Fred Show.
Yeah, yeah, you only have one shot to listen. No, that's not true. You can listen live like you are now, or you can listen to our podcast. A podcast. It's a podcast. It's a podcast at humbleandfredradio.com. Freddie, why don't we talk a little bit about our friends at Spearhead Brewing Company, who have been so kind to the world. They've produced this fantastic elixir in Kingston, Ontario. It's not easy to do. Okay.
Yes, they have, and I enjoyed a few this weekend.
You've been consuming a lot of them. They gave us a bunch of beer.
Yeah, and I keep gravitating to the Hawaiian Pale Ale, which is a bold 6%er, so you gotta watch yourself. West Coast Pale Ale is brewed Hawaiian style with pineapple, but it's just a hint, little swirl of fruit. Other than that, just fantastic, okay? It's fresh, citrusy, hints of tropical fruit, as I say, but just hints, zesty and refreshingly dry finish, and that's what I love about it. Not to take anything away from the Sam Roberts Band Ale as well, which is great in a different way, and that's a 4.5er. Okay, Spearhead Brewing Company, a couple of the products that they deliver out of Kingston, Ontario. Well done.
Why don't you do what 300... No, let me start again. May I, Phil? Take two. Why don't you do what 30,000 Canadian businesses are doing right now? They're enjoying employee benefits from the Chamber Plan. Chamberplan.ca, Canada's number one plan for employee benefits. The leading group benefit plan for firms like yours. From 1 to 100 employees like ours, because it's simple, easy to set up, easy to use forms. Claims are online. As well, it's stable. You know, you're concerned about rising insurance costs, especially for smaller businesses. It ain't easy out there. We can tell you. The rates are stable and smart. Don't add to someone else's profit. The Chamber's plan is a not-for-profit program. All surpluses stay in the plan. And what that means is it helps lower premiums. That's why we recommend it, because we're cheap. Chamberplan.ca. Chamberplan.ca. Where was that comment you just relayed to me from? Was that on our...
Our thing.
Our thing.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Our thing. No,
in the comments?
Emails.
Oh, email.
Email inbox.
Email.
Hero paper.
I do not see it. Just somebody saying that they heard us talking this morning. And they...
Do you want me to read it?
Well, remember, they're also going to listen to the podcast, so...
Yeah, so... No, I'm just saying, hi, guys. Listen, you know, on 8:20 this morning as I drove my 6-year-old daughter to school. Lasted about 45 seconds until Fred started asking if Colin and Justin were both fellas. Can't say I didn't try. I guess it's podcast to get my Humble and Fred comedy hit. Keep up the good work.
Well, that's James. Fun. James.
Oh, no, I know. But that, yeah. Because you said Colin and James were a couple. I didn't know that. And then that's when I just said, oh, are they both fellas? Because you never know. A woman could be Colin, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, a woman could be Justine. Yeah, Justine.
Who knows?
Yeah. No one knows.
But that was my question.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this guy was... What, afraid that his daughter would, I don't know.
Somehow overhear it and then put
No. But I mean, what would the problem be that a 6-year-old shouldn't hear that a Colin and Justin can be together?
I don't know.
I thought
he would have taken more offense with all the talk about, you know, flaccid wieners and
terps
and pee holes.
But
and
maybe he wasn't listening at that point.
Well, I see right now a limousine style SUV is pulling up in front of our studios. First out is a publicist. That's right. Publicist is coming in first. After that is Colin. Then there's Justin. Good now morning, we're, there we are. There we are.
Hey, guys. Hey, fellas.
Hey, fellas. They are, they're just coming in right now. There's a buzz. There's a hubbub. We're like live right now, brother.
Hello, you. Hello, gorgeous.
That's Stan, of course.
Stan. You're gorgeous, aren't you?
No, I know. He's a very handsome lad. These fellas, you remember, they've been on the podcast, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the other studio.
In our other studio.
Thank you. Yeah,
and now we're live, so none of your swearing, none of your dirty swears.
I'm a proper gentleman these days.
Look at this big buzz of people coming in here. Now we got publicists and we got
gentlemen.
People running in and out. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Fabulous. Now girls? Someone just brought in a lamp. I don't know if I'm ready for that.
They got to switch vehicles, unfortunately.
Oh.
Wait a second. Why are there pictures coming in here,
because
too?
Because they have to switch vehicles. We were on another project this morning, which involved all that stuff, and we've changed cars, so we've had to transfer.
Let's get these microphones up to speed.
Gorgeous. Thank you for having us in.
Oh, yeah, gentlemen, indeed. Gentlemen, you don't need headphones if you don't want. You can hear us. Colin Lewis McAllister.
Oh, full name. Hello. I feel
Justin
punished.
Patrick Ryan.
That indeed is me.
Hey.
Welcome back to our program. Colin and Justin.
Hey. Hello.
I love a warm hand on my entrance.
Exactly. Oh, boys. How are you?
Well, look at us. Look at us. Look how good we're doing.
You know what?
It's working. Whatever it is you're doing, it's working.
Unbelievable.
The Humble and Fred experience is working.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So you're Humble and Fred in a different way than we're Colin and Justin, because there's none of the cuddling, is there?
Oh, sometimes.
No.
Do you do a bit of that?
I will say this. Okay. There is affection, caring, and love. And isn't that the basis of every great relationship?
Course, no actual deep snogging.
No. Not that I'm aware of.
No, maybe you've done it in your sleep.
I drank a lot at one point.
Maybe the Christmas party. It's all about the love, isn't it? You know, that's what we're all about.
It is. And, you know, it's funny.
And love comes in different forms.
Do you know what? As long as it's there, that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're like more like brothers than whatever, how you would describe.
Oh, we're a lot more than brothers. My word.
Like brothers from other mothers, maybe. Exactly.
Indeed. You know, it's times have changed. We're just talking a lot today about the changing marijuana laws, but in 1986, when you guys became a couple, times were different, and it was a more courageous. I don't know what the word is. It was different times when nowadays, it's just commonplace.
It is completely changed. I started university in 1986, and I was never really a big pothead, but everybody in my class smoked. I'm not going to say everybody because clearly that's not true, but a lot of people around whom I hung were big users of pot.
Mm-hmm. But I'm also referring to the fact that you could become a couple.
Oh,
and that
see.
Was,
yeah. So everybody's obsessed in Canada.
I love that. It's nothing to do with your relationship. Exactly. Yeah. Actually, I first met you and I was a pothead.
No, I guess because I was saying, you know, times are changing with the marijuana laws, but times have changed since the two of you became a couple.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's a good thing. You know, I think at the same time, you know, I think we were never looking for permission. You know, because nobody's looking for permission in their lives. You know, and I think if you're a good person and you just get on with doing what you're doing, that's all that matters. You know,
are you like officially married at this point?
We are indeed. So we are. We got married in London about maybe ten years ago. 10 years past. I've kind of lost track of time. Every day a pleasure.
And how was that in London 10 years ago?
It was. Do you know what? Everything we've never found any barriers in our lives, and we're obviously very aware that some people have, and we've always tried to do whatever we can to help ourselves and people that are the same as us assimilate into life. We've always been very, very comfortable to be an out and proud gay couple, and if we can in some way help others, then that's a good thing. But we've never had too many dramas.
Well, it's fantastic, and again, at this, you know, where we are today, if it doesn't affect me, why should I care?
Exactly.
Right? And I mean, that applies to so many things.
Yeah, just be, you know. No one's looking for
just
permission.
Be.
You know, because that's we can only be ourselves because everyone else is taken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so don't try and be something else. Just be the best version of yourself you can be.
I'd love to go to a gay wedding.
You would? Well, do you
know
what?
No, I would. Only for the experience of being like something I've never done before.
Breaking news. It's exactly the same as a straight wedding. Well, it's two people who are committed to each other coming together.
Hold on a second.
What?
Hold on a second.
But a lot more fabulous.
Hold on a second. You don't even want to go to a regular wedding. I was at a wedding a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about, we're getting to an age when no one our age is getting married. I went to a younger person's wedding, and
but that might get me there. This is something I've never done before.
Oh, the novelty.
I think it would be.
It's not a novelty. Come on.
Did I say novelty?
No, you're lovely.
Yeah, he says novelty. Part. Getting that novelty gay wedding.
No, I would never
Stop
say novelty.
Yelling.
Are we shouting?
I would never say novelty. I just mean the experience.
Yes.
It's not necessarily common.
And by the way, when I say novelty, I mean that in the sense of a new experience.
Yes. Right. Okay.
Can we just calm down?
We're calming our jets.
We're totally calm.
It's great to have you back. That's the point of this discussion. And the reason I brought up the marijuana thing is because, you know, we're in our 50s and early 60s, and our whole lives something has been illegal, and in a couple days it is going to be legal. In this country, for a long time, a couple of your a same-sex couple was not legal, and it's been legal now for so long. But I think most of us, it's not novel. It's somewhat commonplace, and whatever.
Do you know, we came to Canada 12 years back, and obviously Canada was one of, I think, the first country where gay marriages were permissible, and we felt very comfortable in this country, and indeed the city of Toronto, and we've always been made to feel really welcome. So I think Canada is very forward-thinking in so many ways, and I think the world could take note from what Canadians have done and what the government has done to make life as good as it possibly can be for all good people.
And for all, you know, exactly. At some point, this conversation will seem antiquated because years from now people will just go, oh yeah, all of that is just all of that. Let's talk about why we're here. The great Hey Phil, can we just get a shot of how the studio looks like?
It's just filled with
apologies,
bags. Yeah. And
so we were doing another project this morning, and we were turning a studio from drab to fab using the Colin and Justin home line, which indeed you can find in HomeSense on stores such as. So we've brought it all with us because we've changed car from that particular project to come in to see you, lovely gentlemen. So rather than leave it outside where it might be taken, although nobody in Canada would take it, because people are good in Canada. I could leave anything outside in the street and it would still be there tomorrow, right?
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. that's, you know, it's funny how you've turned your love of, I'm just going to say decorating, but your love of style, you've turned it into such an industry.
Do you know what? We're out there hopefully doing kind of good things for good people, but we're still on a bit of a voyage of discovery at all times. You know, we are very into the home. We're very into the cottage. It's not being somewhere that's about style, but somewhere that's about the person, okay? So in your personal space, it should bring out the best in you. It should be the best version of you, the safest version, the happiest version, you know, the most content. And that's what we're always trying to do with design. You know, it's not really about outdoing your neighbors. It's not about being fashionable. It's about being personal.
Why cottages?
Well, why not cottages? When we came to Canada...
Well, only because it's just... you know what I mean? Not everybody can totally relate to cottages.
For sure.
They're so expensive, it's hard to have one.
Well, okay, yeah. So not everybody has a cottage, but many people aspire to having a cottage.
And yes, they do.
The cottage market is substantially cheaper to get into than the real estate market in the cities. And in fact, we know so many people who've decided to jump out of the urban landscape and jump into cottage country to buy and then flip and then bring that pocket cash back into the cities. So it's quite an interesting way to go.
Interesting.
So we genuinely look at the cottage landscape as a way for people who couldn't normally afford a city purchase. And let's be honest, that's becoming the norm now because property prices have escalated so much.
Mm. But even if you see something on the show that maybe doesn't, you've created something, a space that is for a cottage, but someone might see it and go, oh, you know, I could do that in my home space.
In the city, exactly. You know, I mean, like all the kind of hipsters and all your bloggers talk about hygge. Have you heard of hygge? Which is that, it's H-Y-G-G-E. It's that Scandinavian kind of cult of the feel-good factor. You know, it's these things in Scandinavia that adds up to creating an amazing life. Mm-hmm. You know what? You guys have your own version of that in Canada, and it is called the cottage. You know, it's so beloved. You know, that idea that you will escape the city, you will sit around a campfire singing Kumbaya. You know, you will talk about the weather and about nature. That's something that is just so intrinsically Canadian, and it's amazing that that is now becoming a thing, if you like, that people are bringing into the city. You know, they want a little slice of that, and it means that if you can't afford a cottage, you can still buy into the whole kind of like cottage lifestyle.
In Great Britain, the concept of the cottage, does it
Well, you know what I mean? It's an interesting question. The concept of cottage doesn't really exist in Great Britain because we don't have the climate for it. Okay, in Canada it gets really cold, but at least you have the glorious opportunity of many weeks of beautiful weather each summer. And we don't have that in Britain, so the climate never
Well, you had 1976, so that was cool.
Well, it was that one summer. You're absolutely right.
I know. Still peeling little Scottish people. Still peeling their skin from 76.
Wasn't that... this summer was pretty good, too.
Well, this summer was great. We've been backwards and forwards an awful lot this summer between breaks of filming Great Canadian Cottages, which is our new show, which is indeed why we're here to talk today.
Yes.
Airs on Thursday, every Thursday night
on
at
Cottage Life.
On Cottage Life, it does indeed. And I'll tell you what's new about this show for Colin and Justin, and I love it when I speak about myself in the third person.
yeah, we
it's
do too.
It's not a makeover show.
In fact, we call ourselves Colin and Justin.
I like that.
Air,
you should do. Yeah. It's not a makeover show per se. We don't, Colin and I are not jumping around transforming homes as we normally do. We're actually walking around other people's cottages, and 24 of them in total over the season. Three houses per show, and it's not about a homogenous mix of multi-million-dollar cottages. It's about a really gorgeous assortment of really wonderful homes, from glass boxes to tiny little modest bunkies to big homes built from logs. We actually go to the home of Wendell Clark as well, beloved of all Canadians, a fantastic hockey player, and he and his wife have created the most incredible cottage. So he's one of the featured homes on the show too.
Oh, lucky.
Do you like Wendell Clark?
Oh, I love him.
You
kidding? Oh, yeah.
Of course
I love Wendell.
You know, he's such a cool guy. You know,
very
and, you know,
nice
and
man.
As kind of like new Canadians, you know, not big hockey fans,
right.
We had to look him up, okay? Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, here is a bruiser from the prairies. You know, this guy, you know, he really kind of like put hockey on the map. So we go to his house, and he is... So
house or cottage?
Into, absolutely stunning. Okay, like it was Lake Rosseau, like beautiful, prime site. But a really humble couple. You know, he and his wife Denise were like hands on for everything. They do all their own gardening, their own landscaping. They picked every single piece of furniture in their cabin. And there is this guy, this big hockey legend, talking about transitional pieces of furniture on this and that. And we're just looking at him, thinking this is so cool. You know, we come away thinking if a hockey legend could become an interior designer, then can an interior designer become a hockey legend?
I could become a puck bunny, though.
You could be. Maybe it's time to take to the ice, Justin.
Is there a segment where you two put on some skates and...
Well, we've always got our skates on because we travel through life at a very, very rapid pace. But he was just such a nice guy. And I think what was good about him was the fact that he was so incredibly down to earth.
Mm. Yeah, he's a very nice man.
And he was a great mixture of skill and brawn.
Which is what we're like on the design landscape, you see. So I saw immediate parallels.
Yeah, we're the Wendell Clark of windows.
The thing I wonder too, because you know, one of the things they say that is the most fractious in a relationship is when a couple does a renovation.
Mm.
And you guys have been doing renovations for so long. Is it just when the camera, like you're pleasant, then the camera turns off, you're like, I will kill you.
No, do you know what? We've been a couple now for the best part of 30 years, and we've traveled through maybe 25 of our own property flips in Britain, and a half a dozen or maybe more in Canada. We always know each other's strengths and each other's weaknesses, and each of us recognizes that we're a stronger force together. So we don't really have time to have any type of debacle, and every day is just another glorious opportunity to have bluebirds on our shoulders.
All right.
It truly is, boys. It truly is.
You know, the thing is, you know,
someone wrote that for you.
I know. I love that. You know, couples of Canada, you know, if you can share a bed with someone, then you can share a decision about wallpaper. You know, and I think that's the thing. You know, people get scared by design. Don't they? And as soon as they get scared, they get a little bit antsy, you know, and that's when they start to fall out with each other, you know. So communication is key. And I think giving it a name as well. You know, when you go and buy, if you buy something to wear, you know that, you know, maybe a jacket and a shirt is going to give you a smart look, okay? So there's a communication there. There's a message. People need to think about that with design, you know, so that all sofas aren't the same, you know, all rugs aren't the same. You're putting things together so that they actually spell out.
Do you find, and I would ask this because I don't have a very good sense of design and style, but is it because it's intimidating to me and others? They're afraid that if I get this, then how will I know if it will look good? And is the message just to maybe give it a shot to try it?
Yeah, I think the message is to give it a shot and try it, because if you stand stationary, then nothing happens. So at least if you make an attempt to make a really lovely home and it doesn't work, then you can change things. You can step back and look. But our biggest tip with anybody somebody who's at the head of a design project is to breathe. Do you know, if you rush into things and make knee-jerk reactions, then it's like going to the grocery store with a cart and grabbing things randomly, and you get back home and there's nothing to make dinner with. So if you piece together your scheme, and if you really know, think twice, buy once. And our big adage is to fail to plan is to plan to fail. If you know your strategy, then your home will become really lovely. Now, I imagine you boys have got good homes and you're being humble.
Well, no, what I was going to say, I'm in a new relationship. We've been together almost a year, and she very slowly kind of has quietly, all of a sudden, I have new sheets and a new comforter. I have two sets. I have summer things.
That's what you need.
I know. And all of a sudden, then I have new towels.
I know.
Gently, she said, maybe we should replace these beach towels you use to bathe with.
I know.
It's all of a sudden, my whole thing has been transformed, and I look around and go, you know what? This looks pretty good.
Yeah. We met. How is that for you? How'd you feel?
I felt, you know, it's funny you say that. The first morning I woke up with the new comforter and next to girlfriend Rachel, I was like, well, this is pretty
nice.
Very good. I felt a transformation.
Rachel.
We met a girl recently and she said, Justin and Colin, you've been sleeping with my husband for the last year. We said we didn't touch him. What she meant was she had bought a Colin and Justin bedding set and given it to her husband. So guys across Canada, be scared, because you were rolling around between the sheets with Colin and Justin. Holy moly.
So do you guys own a cottage as well?
Yeah, we do. We have a cottage in Halliburton. Right. We actually have a small compound. We've just bought, this sounds fairly extravagant, but we've just bought a little compound of cottages. And our plan is to turn the three projects into three very different homes. One's going to become a small B&B luxury hotel.
Of course.
One is going to become a property flip. And the other one we're going to move into ourselves. And they're all nearby, so we can keep an eye on the overall project as we go forward.
Now, Halliburton, is that Kawarthas?
No, it's not.
It's north of Halliburton.
But you've done some stuff around the Kawarthas as well?
Yeah, we've done a few projects around the Kawarthas.
The glass box you were talking about, that wouldn't be on Stony Lake, was it?
It was on Stony Lake.
Do you know
that? Isn't that amazing, that cottage?
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. How do you know it?
I'm on the next lake.
Oh, right.
Lovesick Lake.
Yeah. Everyone knows that house, okay?
And what is it?
I'm surprised I haven't showed you. It's just a glass box.
It's a man living
out over the water.
I mean, it looks like a spacecraft. Like, it looks like something that's landed from another planet. And then I'm sure everyone that goes past that goes, that's not a cottage. Look at that. It's made of glass. No. And then you meet the guy.
Pretty good impression.
Very
good.
And then you meet the guy, Larry Williams, who's a photographer. It's a live workspace. And you're like, okay, Larry, this is not a cottage. And he goes, actually, it is. And he tells you how it makes his heart beat and how the changing light and being connected to the water. And you go, this is a cottage, you know. And I think that's the great thing about this show is that the great Canadian cottages are as varied as the people who live in them.
I'll tell you, there's nobody that goes on that lake that's familiar with the lake that doesn't show somebody the glass cottage.
Absolutely.
I gotta show you something.
Rightfully so, because it's an incredible space.
Yes.
And as Colin touched on there, the essence of what makes a great Canadian cottage is if it's right for you, and if you've put your heart into it, and if it's something that reflects either you, your partner, or your family, or indeed that holy triptych, then surely that's a great Canadian cottage.
And the Great Canadian Cottage premieres on Cottage Life this Thursday, October 18 at 10 o'clock. It's a series in which Colin and Justin, who are here, travel to different lake regions and view and tour unique cottages and cabins. I can't personally wait to see it.
It's going to be fab.
It's going to be great.
Also, they will be at the Fall Cottage Life Show taking place in the International Center this Friday to Sunday. You know, these guys did you hear what's happened so far? They have their own line of bedding and stuff, and then HomeSense, and then they own a bunch of stuff, the Airbnb. And do you have any idea what we're talking about? These are mega wealthy royalty.
Oh, come on.
So we started off.
We're just working boys like everyone else.
Our first cottage cost 20 grand.
Working boys, you smell good, fellas.
Well, right.
Good.
I know. Thank you, Tom Ford.
Did you say your first cottage was 20 grand?
Sorry, our first house was 20. 25 grand.
Okay. Like, are you guys from London?
No, we come from a place called Scotland.
Oh, Scotland! Right,
slightly up from London.
Right.
And we bought our first house in 1987 or 1988, and we turned chicken to chicken salad.
Chicken
poo.
Chicken
poo. Chicken poo into chicken pie.
Chicken pie. Thank you very much.
I grew up a poor Jew on the prairie, hadn't anything but my old man Harry and some gefilte fish. Gefilte fish was all we had. We fished it all the day long, and me and my dad came back empty, so we just ate pickles. Had to get somebody to fix our stuff. We didn't know how to do it ourselves.
We're so Jews.
Hired a guy. Because we're Jews on the prairie. Jews on the prairie. We're Jews on the prairie.
There you go.
That's the Prairie Jew song.
It's the Prairie Jew. I was wondering if I could help me.
This is Humble and Fred.
Welcome back. The best of Humble and Fred continues on air and online. I'm Philip Hong. Please do not adjust your set. We have a new segment coming up. This is Humble and Fred Memories. We've got 7 years of great Humble and Fred memories, and we're going to feature our guests every week for your listening pleasure. So let's go into a wonderful story told by John Hastings. He got into a car accident in England.
John Hastings!
Yay! Ever since we started, one of the first comics we ever had on was this tall, well, he's not albino, but he's very white.
Very white.
And he came in here with some radio experience. He had worked on some morning shows. Mm-hmm. He knew what he was doing, though. He knew how to do radio.
Got
to
bring it, guys. That's the
important
thing.
A lot of times comics come in here, they got nothing. But this guy's got too much.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing better than a morning radio show with a comedian. So, how are you doing? Yeah,
Oh, we've had some of those.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Just a nice Leonard Cohen in the morning. Okay. How are you doing? It's bleak. Oh, good. Yeah, this would be a good time for people to laugh.
What show did you work on? Was it in Montreal or here?
Worked on the Aaron and Tasso show.
Yeah, great.
I forgot the call letters. It's been too long
now. But those guys were like a legitimate radio morning show. They weren't Humble and Fred level, but they were pretty, you know, they were like.
They were certainly not.
There was like AAA ball.
It was great. I got to see the inside of working in radio, you know, sitting in a program director's office, being explained who's listening, and you just want to take a brick to your own genitals at a certain point. Like, it's the most.
You know, I haven't listened to a traditional, like, FM morning show like we used to do.
Yeah.
Probably in years. It's obviously because we're on in the morning. But I'm really not interested.
I'm the same as you. I haven't heard it in years.
Like, what are they doing? Like, do they still do bits and funny, like, I don't know?
No, they do 60 seconds of sort of talk up, and then there's a call. And it's really a shame because there's tons of people in radio. They do a call that's so clearly edited together from someone who called in, and they were like, speaking of red shoes, Janet's got red shoes. Janet, red shoes? Yes. No, that was Janet. All right, here's filter. Like,
It's funny you brought that up, Freddie, because the other day, I think it was 2 days ago, there was a really nice couple of people that do a morning show in Hamilton. They've been in there for years. Mm-hmm. And they were doing now, it used to be we you know, radio people did their promo. Tomorrow on the show, John Hastings is going to talk about, you know, getting hit by a car. But they did it on Facebook, and it was a Facebook Live promo. Their thing was, tomorrow we're going to talk about movies that scared you. And I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, no.
And then the two of them were going back and forth. Well, did anything scare you? Only you scare me. Ha ha. Oh,
what,
yeah.
But I like what you guys do, and what I think is lacking in a lot of radio is there's a lack of personality in that they're all sort of that cookie cutter of it's like, it's kind of the rebel dude, you know, he's got a cottage, but he's got a skidoo at the cottage. And then like a high-voiced woman who's like his mom, but they're same age. And it's just that weird thing of like, I was driving in a car. What in the morning, you devil? Like, it's just like, oh, God. And then they play Shania Twain and everyone.
You know, it's funny. It used to be that there were big personalities doing those shows. And as John said, there's some talented people, but they're not getting to be big personalities anymore.
The thing he just said that was funny is a girl who has a high-pitched voice who's the same age as him, but actually sound. I had
one of those. I would say something, and a guest would be in the studio, and she'd say, oh, don't listen to him. What? How old are you?
We're on the radio. The point is they need to be listening to him.
Get a load of this. This isn't bull. When I was in Bannerburn. Anyway, I took the afternoon newswoman, and I thought, oh, I'll put her in the morning show with the guy. No, I did, because I thought, it was female skewed for adults, and I thought it might be good to bring her down. She can lend her perspective as a mother and a woman of Peterborough. Anyway, she actually got mad at me for it. I looked at it as a promotion. But anyway, she worked with a morning guy, and whenever he got sort of risque, like talked about adult stuff, she'd take her headset off and walk out of the studio.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Not kidding
you. That's a true story.
Well, why would you? But that's your job. You have to stay on the radio if you're on the radio.
Well, because she, as she told me, she was out of her comfort zone. And I said, come on, grow. Have some fun with the morning show. So that was her little. And there was a union there, so I couldn't do anything about it. Yeah, literally take her headset off and get up and walk out of the studio and leave them all alone.
What I do find fascinating is, like, when I was, like, 16 working in, like, sports radio as an intern, it was like walking into Sing Sing. Like, it's literally, there's a guy smoking and gambling all of his paycheck away. The show prep is one person does everything. The other one is having a beer.
Yeah.
And then we, like, get some clips, and then we get yelled at for crazy things. And the old newsman on the talk radio station across the hall, Lowell Green, used to bang on the studio glass while there was a live show to get us to open up. And then so the sports radio show turned into us vocally attacking a station on the same network. And it was a whole thing. And then now it's, like, you know, part of it is good that it's, you know, it's not happening and a man in his 80s isn't yelling at me for not getting him cookies, even though I don't work for him. But at the same time, he lacks that sort of that spark and that thing that you actually want to listen to.
Real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what you're about to hear is a story you don't hear every day, which is a man made of flesh. He's not a god. He's not an icon. He's just a guy. And he was waltzing. Were you waltzing or were you sashaying?
I was on a bike.
Oh, you were biking.
I was biking.
With the big wheel?
I was on a big wheel. I was on a penny farthing.
Penny farthing.
When
we were kids, that's what Fred and I used to ride
on a bone shaker on the way to an opium den?
No, on the way in our bathing costume on the way to the...
Swinging like a
pitcher. Handlebar mustaches.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, John was on his bike.
I was on my bicycle 2 months ago yesterday. 2 months ago yesterday, I was biking along near my house. By the way, if anyone says, we don't need bike lanes, you're a liar. If I had a bike lane, this would never have happened.
You'd still be alive.
I would still be alive as opposed to being the ghost that I am now. So I was biking along, and in London, you traditionally cycle in the bus lane. That's also the bike lane.
Helmet or no helmet?
No helmet.
Of course.
Was my head hurt? No. Thank God, because if not, I would be dead. And a bike, I'm biking along, and a car, to try and cut around, what you'll do in London is you'll cut into the bus lane quickly to move around the other car. A car did that, took out my back tire. I sort of felt it happening, so I stayed holding onto the handlebars, and I smoked the asphalt and broke my elbow. So all of you have a hook bone that's keeping your elbow and your arm floating together, and that snapped off and shot up my arm because it's attached to the tricep.
Oh.
Okay, hang on a second. So you're going along, and he hit your back tire from the right or left?
Hit it from the... right, his left.
So you went immediately over? Because, you know, the thing about accidents is when they happen in they happen very quickly. It's not like in the movies where it's like, wah. But, like, all of a sudden you're on the ground?
Yeah, I was on the ground, and I could feel myself. I was already in shock because something was broken. I was like that. And you just were like, whoa. And I get out of the road. He takes off, never to be seen again. Gone. Jamaican lady rolls down her window and just starts screaming, you got hit by a car, as if I didn't know. She says, do you want the license plate number? I said, sure, I get it from her.
Aw.
She speeds off. Two Hasidic Jews run over to me and go, did you get the license plate number? I said, yes. They said, do you have a phone? I said, yes. And they said, are you going to die? And I said, no.
They actually said, are you going to die?
The reason is, it was a Friday night. It was the Sabbath. So they went, we can only help you if you're going to die, but you have a phone. You'll be fine. Call the police. It was after sundown.
So they can't help you.
They can't help me. They're just saying... if I was dying,
why couldn't they help you?
Because they can't do work after sundown on the Sabbath.
Can't do work, and also specifically if you
can't operate elevators. Are you going to go in the elevator?
Wait a minute. Yeah. But somebody is hurt.
Yeah,
but it's only if somebody's hurt. Oh, okay. No, but not even hurt, dying because I'm a goy,
right?
Obviously, and so to them, in the Hasidic variant of Judaism. Also, goys are below them, so they're not going to help us unless I'm dying and one of God's.
By the way, just so you know, we all think that.
Yeah, no, I know.
Don't you love religion?
It's fascinating.
Oh, yeah, because I told you about this. It's funny. Let's pause the story. I told you about this recently, that they call them Sabbath goys, where very observant Hasidim and beyond that get goys to operate like stuff for them on the Sabbath. Like, if I was super religious, I'd say, hey, Fred, before you leave here, can you throw on a few lights on the Sabbath so I don't have to touch the lights? because a book that's 5,700 years old said don't eat pig.
Why isn't there just a world conference and everybody get together and just stop it?
Oh, it's just
this nonsense. They also, stop it.
Can you imagine that, though? Because a book 5,700 years ago said, hey, on Saturdays, don't eat pigs or something.
Yeah, but it's also, I like that. But also, isn't there a bunch of stuff on timers and stuff like that in houses? And you'll have two dishwashers, which I can't figure out why.
And milk and meat and dishes and all that stuff.
And what happens if a young person questions that?
Well, they don't because they're brought up in it.
Yeah.
The same way that you're...
No, but there's got to be exceptions to the rules where I'm brought up in this, but hey, wait a minute, I've been doing
this. Well, but they do it...
They do. Some kids don't, like, you know, there's this whole documentary about kids leaving the New York Hasidic community.
I saw that
one. Yeah, very interesting. Mm-hmm. But it's the same way, listen, and I'm not making a light of this, but the same way that kids are indoctrinated into being Leaf fans. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're, and I mean that seriously, like, if you're in your home and this is how you live your lives, then your children do. Yeah. Unless the odd one, you know, becomes a Habs fan. Should I keep going with this metaphor?
They see the light and stop rooting for the Toronto Maple Leafs, a terrible organization that is not a dynasty. If Kennedy was still the president when you won the Stanley Cup, you don't get to call yourselves a sports dynasty.
Actually, it was Lyndon B. Johnson.
Oh, was it Lyndon B. Johnson? Still doesn't help. It doesn't help. Like, it's slightly better. Yeah. It's
if everything was in black and white the last time. So, getting back to this, and by the way, I don't know, the last, I watched some of your, you were workshopping some stand-up around this story. But.
Yeah, so it, this is the actual story. If you see it on stage, it's kind of pumped up with jokes, because what then happens is I realize, I'm meeting my friend Phil, who'd moved to London that day. I've given up my place in London. I'm technically a homeless person right now. He was on the corner. He could see what had happened. He didn't realize it was me. I called him, and he went, oh, that was you? And then he, like, runs down and gets my bike. I've called the police at this point, because in Britain, for everything, you call the police. You don't call the ambulance. The police will come, and they will decide what's going on, unless it's like, I'm having a heart attack, and they're like, we'll send an ambulance as well. How many cops? By the way, if you don't believe in white privilege, allow me to change your mind. How many police for a hit and run where the guy is fine and makes the call? How many police do you think?
A couple?
Pick a number.
Like two.
Way higher.
What's yours?
Five.
Six. Six cops.
Bobbies? So what's that got to do
with
what?
Bobby's six on bobbies. Bicycle 2x2, so three bicycles, six bobbies.
Oh, no, they were in, like, and it was crazy. They pull in, like, get out. One of them's checking the CCTV camera, because in Britain, everything's under surveillance. They're like, okay, we might have the footage of the whole thing. I'm working on this mic technique. They start interviewing me the whole thing. They got to make sure I'm not drunk. They got to make sure I'm not.
But aren't you in pain?
No, I'm in complete shock. I can't.
Are you bleeding?
No, it's all in here. I look at my arm and I could see all, like, imagine your elbow. No, imagine there's no elbow there. It's just your two arm bones, but I'm in such shock.
You're not really feeling
it. I don't feel anything. Yeah, I feel fine.
Yeah.
And then
I've heard of that.
My buddy Phil kept saying, you kept basically, almost, it looked like you were about to pass out, and then you'd save yourself and stand back up again. And at that point, the cop was like, listen, there's an ambulance shortage in London. Get in the car. We'll take you to a hospital.
I
was
why is that white privilege? Can I just ask you?
Why do you need six police officers for one guy?
If you had been a black man, six wouldn't have come. Is that what you're saying?
I believe that to be true.
You don't know that.
I don't know that to be true.
Well, that's interesting.
Are you saying that because you're super white, like your eyebrows are blonde and stuff?
Or? I did say on the 911 call, white man down, and then I saw the police arrive.
Oh, that's the key.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Correct.
Right. Did you send a face shot? What are those called, Phil?
Selfie.
Yeah. Did you send a of your eyebrows and said, and they're like, oh my gosh. You mentioned, we think we're pretty lucky here in Canada. We have socialized medicine and, you know, things get taken care of. But you're saying in Britain.
Walk into the emergency room, Friday night, busy emergency room. How long from, and this is the things I did.
I like quizzes.
A lot of quizzes.
It's the best. I got nurse consult, x-ray, emergency room consult, surgical consult, and they released. How long for all of that?
37 minutes.
17 hours.
2 hours.
Wow.
2 hours. It was bananas. Very fun. Also, by the way, here's a fun thing when you live in another continent from your family. Calling them all back in Canada to say things like, I've broken my arm, but you have to leave voicemail messages, and then you go home to sleep because they gave you morphine tablets.
Right.
And you wake up to a litany of confused and nervous voicemails. That's right, Stan. Stan's favorite. Stan loves morphine. He's a junkie.
So you go in the hospital, and within minutes, you're
seen. Like, ladies and gentlemen. Also, I did walk in with the police. The police escorted me in.
All six of them, or did the other four?
Only two.
Only two.
I got the lead guy and his number two. They walked me in, and they did lie at the emergency room desk. They said they walked in and went, broken elbow. He was dizzy and vomited.
Mm.
And And I did say, I'm not. And they went, shh. And then they came over and they're like, anytime you're in an emergency room, just say you were dizzy and you're vomited. As soon as you get in the other room, you can just tell them that you weren't.
It's funny. That's how I get through lines at the movies. I'm dizzy and I'm vomiting. Can you let me in?
Sir, you can't. You don't have a ticket for The Last Jedi. I was dizzy and I was vomiting in the car park. Can you please let me
through? Just let me in. It's an emergency. I need to sit down.
Yes. No, I need to see Luke Skywalker.
You know, it's funny because I was with Spencer less than a month ago, my daughter, and we had to go to the hospital over here in the big city. And it was quite a time before anyone saw us.
I've gone to the hospital and it was like six, 7 hours. And
yeah.
2 hours. And I kept saying, they're like, oh, sorry for the wait. And I'm like, guys, it's been 2 hours. Surgery within a week. And like, I've had surgery in Canada. I met everyone. I met the head of the department, the guy who was doing my surgery, the other guy. And then all the nurses came in to be like, here's what's going to happen. It's going to be fine. That was great. Get right on to the anesthesiologist. I don't do this part of the bit anymore, but let's just hear it on the radio. And then it goes from all these medical professionals to literally a dude in a black t-shirt and jeans who is giving me the drugs. Like, it's literally like they brought in a roadie so we could party. And he goes, okay, I'm going to give you fentanyl and I'm going to give you propofol. I'll give you the fentanyl first. You'll know it's working. And I said, how will I know it's working? And he went, you will know it's working, which is true. Everyone who's addicted to fentanyl, I totally get it. I've never been happier in my entire life. Also, they gave me propofol. That's what killed Michael Jackson.
Yeah, it's that heavy sleeping medication.
He died happy. I've never had a better sleep in my entire life. But this guy looks at my chart, and it says comedian, brings over a stool and goes, you're a comedian. You want to hear a joke?
What? This is the anesthesiologist?
This is the anesthesiologist. And in my head, I'm going, absolutely not. But he's in charge of the pain meds. So he goes, all right, here's
this
my...
This is before...
I'm in the middle of a fentanyl fog, feeling the pharmaceutical hand reaching it to put me to sleep. And he goes, all right, so a bloke goes into prison. Doesn't that specify if he's a prisoner or he works at the prison?
Just watch the P's there, bud.
I know this is going to be a disaster. There's so many P just words.
So
many P's coming up. There we go. So he goes, a bloke goes to prison. And he walks into his cell and there's a prisoner that's already there. And old prisoner goes to the new prisoner. Do you want to play Mummy Daddy?
And you're on a gurney at this point?
I'm on a gurney in one of those paper dresses. Just
you got yellow stuff on your elbow.
Opioided to death. They marked it. They write...
arm.
They write this one.
I know.
And they wrote not this one on the other one, which I was like, if I sweat and get rid of that knot, we're in trouble. And he goes, then the new prisoner says, yeah. And then the old prisoner goes, who do you want to be, mummy or daddy? And the new prisoner goes, I'll be daddy. And he goes, oh, the old prisoner then goes, all right, come here and mummy's. And then out. And then I woke up in the recovery room. That was my last words on this earth, possibly. And then I hear that and just wake up in the recovery room covered, like there's all these other people coming out of surgery. And the only thing I can think is mummy's. As these nurses are attending to me, and I'm all emotional, so I'm like, I don't know if you had heavy meds, but you scream crying. There's so much emotion to it, but all I'm thinking is, don't say mummy's right now.
I love that. Yeah. And it was your right arm?
It's my right arm. So
are you fine?
That's the scar right there.
Wow.
That's pretty fun. Yes.
It's like Tommy John surgery.
Yeah. What's Tommy John surgery?
He was a pitcher. Mm-hmm. The elbow repair procedure.
Back with Mickey Mantle, I assume.
No, by the way.
When was it? When?
No, 70s, maybe?
Tommy John?
Yeah, wasn't it?
No, 80s. He played for Atlanta.
The last great era of baseball.
Listen,
where they were still fat.
But all pitchers that have that surgery, it's called the Tommy John surgery.
Because he did it himself on the mound?
It was a DIY show.
It was just the seventh-inning stretch. He just gave himself some heroin, tied it off, and just saw it in with a pencil.
Just go with the Tommy John surgery.
I'm just saying.
Everybody knows it.
It's not. I don't think everyone knows it. Yes, out of the four people that are on the radio right now.
He knows it.
Fred, do you know the Tommy John surgery?
Absolutely, yes.
Why are you winking?
It's a reference now. The thing is, if you listen to sports radio and they're talking about a picture, they'll often say, oh, and he underwent Tommy John in 2007.
Oh, so it's
people
sort of
just
like,
know what it is.
It's like the arm equivalent of Lou Gehrig's disease.
Yes. Yeah. That's sort exactly of. What it is. Yeah.
Did he also give a speech?
Yes, he did.
My arm hurts.
Yeah.
It's funny. I Googled Tommy John. You know what comes up? Tommy John is an American apparel company that produces premium underwear.
Yes! What?
I love their underwear.
Please tell me that that's what he went into. I love...
No, no. I think it's... I don't think they're connected, but... Other than the name.
You know, that underwear company has really missed the boat of not turning Tommy John surgery into penis extension surgery. That would be a great way to really confuse sports fans.
Tommy John.
Which one to be, mummy or daddy?
Oh.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my
bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
All right, Johnny Hastings, tonight at Yuck Yucks through the weekend. Go to yuckyuckstoronto.com or whatever that website is for time. So I think tonight it's 9, tomorrow it's 8 and 10, then it's Sunday night, whatever. JohnHastings.com. John Hastings is a... fantastic addition to any morning show.
Mm-hmm.
So you were, Hastings, you're not going to stay in London, or are you going to stay in the UK, or are you going to do a coming back to North America tour, or that type of thing?
I don't know. Well, I'm here, and then I'm going back to do a TV thing for a day, and then I'm flying to Australia, so that's going to be a fun week of flying literally around the world. Oh, it's going to be a hoot.
Is this your first time going to Australia?
This is my third time going to Australia.
Wow.
Do yourselves a favor.
I've never been to.
You have to.
Well, I'm only... How many years do we have left before we're... You said you've got 11 good years?
You have 10 years left on your body.
What do I got, 13 years then, before we're into our 70s?
Well, 5 or 6 years from now, I'll have to buy an extra seat for my prostate. So I want to do before then.
So the humble...
Just like a character hanging out my ass.
The Humble and Fred and Prostate Show.
You know, it'd be cool if yours got so big that it became almost like whatever those shows used to be. Where tonight on the show, Fred Patterson's prostate's the size of a smart car, and he has to, you know, those old radio bits
where they, you know, guy would be losing weight, and every day they would, you know, what's your weight today? And
right, those bits,
all those bits,
sure.
The greatest loser.
Maybe we should get Phil to stick his finger up my ass every day just to get a. An ongoing thing. Then people will want to tune in just to see how
exactly.
big it is.
Yeah. I just think they tune in just to Facebook Live, Phil fingering your...
Yeah.
.com!
So is it like a thing that just happens with the prostate, or do you have a prostate problem?
No, all men, as they age, your prostate... Three things keep growing. Your ears, your nose, and your prostate.
Great.
Yeah. No, I know.
More stuff to look forward to.
My ears are growing unevenly. My right one has gone rogue. My left one's fine.
So you just have one... Is that from years of literally wearing your headphones exactly like that?
I think so.
Well, I'm glad to see you've fixed the problem. He's doubling up on his prostate medication, and you're cultivating one giant ear.
I don't even care anymore.
You just want people to know you're in radio.
I'm just giving up caring.
You just have, like, half of your head is just an ear.
That's how they're going to find out I was in radio, not this incredibly dulcet.
Well, everyone knows because, you know, it's on the streets.
You've never been to Australia, have you?
No, I'm going.
Why does he get to go 3 times and we haven't gone at all?
Because he goes there for work.
Is that what he does?
Yeah. You guys have a podcast. You could put these mics on a plane. It would be a great, interesting show.
You can't go there unless you go for 3 or 4 weeks.
Yes. We go and do our podcast.
You go and do
there
the podcast every
for 3 or 4
day
weeks.
For a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And then we do whatever people do in Australia.
But also, by the way, you can go for a week because it's the flight is so crazy. You go through jet lag and enter into a new phase where you can just sleep, eat, and... any time of the day. You need no lag time. It's just like, what do you want to do right now? Sleepy, you pick.
So what is the time? Are you going to fly from the UK?
I'm going to fly from the UK. So that's a 27-hour flight with a layover. Mm-hmm. And you feel insane. Mm-hmm. And then I think you are either a day and a half ahead or a day and a half behind. I have no idea.
Ahead.
You just... What? Ahead. You're a day and a half ahead. Mm-hmm. And it's madness for 3 days. Like, you just don't know anything. You sweat all the time. They give you all these advice. One of the big things is go into a deprivation tank, and that's supposed to cure you, where, you know, you float in the water.
Yeah, I actually was in literally in one last evening.
I floated.
I got
to do that. I want to float so badly.
It's so good.
It seems so amazing.
It's the best thing ever.
Oh, and yeah, that's the big thing. It's like, go into a deprivation tank for like 2 hours, and that will reset your body.
Our boy. Where are you going this night? You going to Singapore?
Singapore, which is 13 hours ahead.
But he goes over, because that's where, check this out, that's where his, wait for it, this is going to blow your mind. That's where his wife, he got married.
You got married to a woman in Singapore?
No, Cambodia.
She's Cambodian. Yeah.
Party on.
So she gets to fly there.
Did you guys have the wedding reception at that bar where you can shoot any type of gun? But booze is free? There's a bar in Cambodia. You have to pay for bullets, but booze is free.
Okay.
There's also bars where they shoot ping pong balls out their vahoos.
Oh,
that's Thailand.
Thailand. Right. You can't have the same country to have both of those types of bars, because someone will get confused quickly And eventually someone's just shooting a bullet out of their vagina.
Mm-hmm. A gun with a ping pong ball.
Yeah, Phil got married. Went and got married.
Did you guys know, or did he just walk in with a newfound confidence in a wedding ring?
We knew.
Did you guys go to the wedding?
No.
Well, we're going to hold.
He got married in Hong Kong.
Yeah, we got
you would have loved Hong Kong.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Sex robots and reasonably priced ramen. It's got your guys' names written all over it.
There's only one problem with all of this, John. It costs money. For us to take this show to Australia for 2 or 3 weeks would cost money.
Mm.
For us to go to Hong Kong for his wedding would cost
money.
Or Cambodia, wherever.
Mm.
Wherever.
Money.
Because money.
Words on the street. It's a highly popular show. Just got to turn. You got to turn that talk.
That's what I heard.
Into sweet cash, into some of them sticky 20s Canada has now.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyways, John's going to Australia, and that's fantastic.
This is Humble and Fred.
What wonderful memories. The great John Hastings, a very funny comedian with wonderful storytelling skills. And there's more to the Best of Humble and Fred from the week coming up. You're listening to the Best of Humble and Fred on air and online. And now, the second hour of the Best of Humble and Fred, powered by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, PayTM, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Strain Print.
Someone said you love I had a conversation with the Fred Man yesterday. He was, I would say, in the last 2 months of his post-prostate shaving, the most uncomfortable I've heard him was yesterday, and the Fred Man is now suffering from a urinary tract infection, and as his physician, I advise that he stay at home. So, filling in for the ailing Mr. Patterson, please welcome to our microphones once again, having just made his Humble and Fred podcast, you know, terrestrial radio, first appearance in, I guess, 17 years or 15 years, whatever it was. He's back. Lou Skies is everybody.
Woo! Yeah.
Lou.
Well, thank you very much, Howard. It's great to be here once again. And, you know, love seeing you develop new talent with Phil here in the room.
Oh, thank you, Lou.
Last night I was watching, or yesterday afternoon I think it was, I was watching TV and there was Jeff Marek, one of your alumni.
Yes, another participant in the Humble and Fred finishing school.
Yes, you know, and, you know, there are so many out there that you've, you know, brought into the industry, including me. And, you know, all I can say is thanks. You know, if not for them, at least for myself.
Thank you, Lou Skies. Thank you for being a friend.
Hey, it's the only way to get through this experience, man.
You know, it's funny you bring up Jeff Marek. Jeff Marek was, I think he was, because in those early days of radio, we had like 19 people working on the show. I think we had we might have had two news people. I think we had a top hour news guy. And then we had Marek doing the half hours. Like, it was insane, the number of people that used to work in this business.
Yeah, it's true. I remember Sandra Plagakis.
That's right.
Right, when you were over at the Edge.
We were at the Edge. So, so something happened. I remember going to our boss, Stu Myers, and this is true. And I said to him, Stu, I've never used this word before. I'm begging you to give us Marek. Because there was going to be some shuffling there, and I'm not sure I got down on my hands and knees, but I said, please, Stu, let us have that
because
kid.
You can tell what talent is. And that's what I'm saying with Phil. Enthusiasm, talent, yes. Passion. These are the things that drive careers.
Exactly. Anyway, Marek turned out to be Marek. He's a great kid. You, on the other hand, sir, are you're a legend. You're an economist. You're a broadcaster.
Educator.
You were at, where were you for years?
I was at Sheridan.
Sheridan?
Sheridan in their business school, teaching economics and finance.
I dropped into one of your classes over there.
That's
fantastic.
Right. That's right.
The children, the young minds you've
shaped, formed,
yes.
Influenced. You know, yes. I'm going to a wedding of a former student on Saturday.
Nice.
Ricky is getting married to the love of his life. He invited me. I'm going to be there for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. And this would be somebody in their 20s, early 30s.
30s now.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
it's funny because
time goes fast.
About a month ago, I was invited to a wedding of a young person that I'm friends with. There's a whole cohort of sort of 25 to 35 year old golfers that I compete with and I've gotten to be friends with. And, you know, I went to a, it's funny at our age, the reason I bring it up is that you don't really get invited to a lot of peer weddings.
No, that cycle is
that
done.
That cycle's done.
You know,
it's mostly like grandchildren's brisses and funerals. But it was interesting for me. I went with girlfriend Rachel to go to a wedding of somebody you're friends with, a younger person. It was a great experience.
Well, I can tell you that one of the things that I realized over the course of a lifetime is that if I didn't develop friendships with people younger than me, you know, when Madeline, my daughter, you know, was maybe looking for an angle on something,
mm-hmm.
the only people would be like you and me saying, well, she can come and mow the lawn, you know. No,
that's
I'm looking
right.
for a gig for, you know, I want to help her get where she wants to go. So, you know, having all these young people in your life is enriching, number one. And, you know, it opens up visibility to things you may ignore.
100%. You know, I've spent the last... Now, this is year three of the return to stand-up, and it's the same thing with those kids. Like, I regularly spend time with, in the summer, you know, younger golf people, and in the wintertime, you know, funny people on the make, you know, 25 to 35 to 45-year-olds. And most people our age don't have that experience anymore. It's mostly... You know, can you come in? No, I've got a doctor's appointment.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I think that if you want to have a dynamic life, look intergenerationally, right?
Yes.
Look at getting that long tail on
yes.
your life. You know, especially if you're, you know, at all interested in things that you don't have time to look at anymore.
Well, I've even gone beyond that. I have an interspecies relationship.
With Stan?
With Stan. And I can tell you right now, like when you walked in here a while ago, that reception you received from Stan is the reason you have dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, Stan got excited to see you. We were excited to see you. Develop interspecies relationships,
yeah,
ladies and gentlemen.
That. You know, I'm so busy raising my species, Madeline.
Yeah,
you know, she's leaned on me.
Well, you've
for
got a 15. She's only 15.
She's 15.
Right.
That's right. But, you know, over the years, right, I mean, she's an only child or our only child. And, you know, she's been leaning on me for a pet forever.
Oh, yeah.
And I had to buy her off. So she comes to me, Daddy, and she's crying, and I want a dog, and I, you know, I'd really love to have a dog, and I'm tormented because I'm the one, you know, working out of the house, and I would be the one to take care of the dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want that job because I was already taking care of a human and everything else that comes through my doorway, right? So I bought her off. So I started negotiating with Madeline. I said, well, Madeline, how about I give you $200? You know, and I'll
hold
just,
on a second. I mean, she comes to your office, you say, listen, I won't get you a dog, but here's a couple of Krispies.
Yeah, well, she said no. Yeah, well, I came, you know,
did
I thought.
Did she say
of,
no, that, give me I, another
I
offer?
I did the research, and I said, you know, maybe there's a shorter-lived species that I can get. Because a dog can, you know, you can have him for 20 years,
could
right?
Live, well, yeah, 15 years if you're lucky,
well,
yeah.
Okay, so, you know, but I'm not willing to make that kind of commitment of my
so
time.
You bought her off with a shorter like you searched
no,
researched
I did.
Short-lived
I,
species.
That's right, to see if I could get out of that mix in a shorter period
Here's
of time.
Here's a beetle. It'll be dead in 24 hours.
Maybe not. Maybe not. You know, yesterday I was looking out the window in my kitchen and there was a snail stuck to the window.
Yes.
And I said, what is going on? Maybe it's like, you know, this is warmth, right, coming through the pane of glass, and this is how it's going to survive the winter. And I was shocked that some snails will live for like 10 years. So, you know, are you talking about a beetle?
Okay.
Nah, maybe not. Maybe it'll be around a lot longer than you would want.
So what did you buy her off
so
with?
So I came to the realization that, you know, I looked at guinea pigs. Mm. Right? And I said, oh, no. Because once I did the research, and by the way, if you go to certain countries in Latin America or South America, you might see the guinea pig on a plate.
I was going to say, it's a delicacy.
I said, no, okay. But
I can't get her something and could be eaten by mistake.
Perfect for the grill.
So, exactly. So I looked at it, but they're like, you have to have two of them.
Right? Because
what,
they're social.
You, oh, I see.
You know, they're social. They need.
God forbid, yeah.
Right? And then if they get out, they chew up all your wires and everything for whatever reason.
So what did you settle on?
So I realized that I'm not a rancher and I'm not a you know, into animal husbandry and all that stuff. But I said, well, I'll negotiate, right? I'm a capitalist. Let me offer her money. So I started at two. No, daddy. I got her up to four. No, daddy. I said, what is wrong with this offer?
What is your price?
Right. Well, I found out that there was no value that she could attach to money. And I was up to $600 at this point, Howard.
Tell you what, $600 you can take Stan out the door.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me $6.
Yeah, but then I'd have to take care of him.
Whatever.
Yeah. So we're up to $600, and I say to myself, you know what? She's not seeing the value. And then I translated it, and I said, you know, $600, Madeline, represents six American Girl dolls, which she was fascinated with.
Oh yeah.
And all of a sudden, she said, no. I said, I'll give you seven. That's seven American Girl dolls. No, I'm up to eight. And she's still saying no. I say nine. 900 smacks, right? And she's saying no. And you know what I said to her? I said, honey, this is my last offer. And I go to walk away, and she said, wait a minute, daddy. Ding. She was ready to close. I closed her. She shook hands. I made her sign a Matty Daddy contract and gave her a $100 bonus to round it up to $1,000 for the rights to have pets in my home.
Well, that's, you know what? First of all, awesome story. Secondly, you saved yourself thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
You have no idea. Like, I figured out the other day, I don't even know what he's costing me. But it's certainly more than $1,000.
Yes.
Annually. Now, what has she done with her money? Has she invested it?
No, it's working for her. But the more important thing was, years later, she came back and said, I'll buy that, because I made her sign a contract, a Matty Daddy contract, assigning me the rights to pet ownership. Mm-hmm. She wanted to buy it back for the same amount of money. And I had to teach her. I said, no, the rights to pet ownership in my home now cost $1 million.
Oh, yeah. So you've set the price beyond what she can afford.
Right. Because I don't want to close that deal. Well for a million, I would.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know who Lou Skeezes is, that's who Lou Skeezes is. He's doing deals with his daughter. 1-833-437-8465 is not only the number to call and say hello to Lou, but also to text. Somebody just text us a question. Happy capitalism, it starts with. Does Skeezes get to keep that saying, or is it owned by his former corporate overlords? That comes from Jeff K. in Ottawa.
In Ottawa?
Yeah, man.
Wow. Jeff, I own the trademark to Happy Capitalism because I created it, and well, I went to a lawyer and captured it, right?
Well, here's the thing I would say. Jeff, if you didn't know the answer to that question before the dog story, we don't think he has Happy Capitalism.
He's got a non-compete agreement.
Did you? There you go. Look at Phil. Once in a while.
Bada boom.
Phil comes in. Crazy rich Asians. Did you start saying that when you were on Report on Business TV,
no.
Or was that a mojo?
No.
It was before that.
Yeah, so I'm living in Calgary. I've opened up a comedy club with my partner, Rick Babcock. Now, before we were a comedy club, Beggar's Banquet, we were a restaurant, and the National Energy Program came. And all of our assumptions about market demand and growth and all that were worth nothing. Okay, we had to scramble. I was never more creative. I was never more passionate because I had money in the deal and I had to get the money out. And I used to look over at Rick and say, happy capitalism, as we were getting our cans kicked up the Stephen Avenue Mall in Calgary. And I said, you know what? It cuts two ways. I mean, my implication with happy capitalism, you know, we all go in there with these big, you know, yeah, baby, it's going to be a big score. And then sometimes the reality comes in. You got to pivot to something that's going to save your bacon. Yeah. So that's where that came from.
So it was an ideal. It was something you lived through. That was around. Did I know you when you were Beggar's Banquet? I think
yeah.
I met you.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember doing your comedy club. Because
yeah,
I was doing Yuck Yucks in Calgary.
That was coming to the end of the experience.
When we met.
Yeah, when I met you, I was getting out of that deal.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to suck you into something that, you know, like the vortex. that you may not have enjoyed if yeah, I wasn't I, there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we both know I've been sucked into my own vortexes several times. You know, like, I've done okay investment-wise, and I've done okay. Certainly, the retirement SHRP has helped. But over my lifetime, I've invested in capital projects and side deals and ventures on my own, and I've lost money. And
but look how enriched your life
has
been.
What I was going to say is, you know, lots of times you look, people will, you know, focus on what has failed. But I look at it sometimes, and I think, okay, what did I learn from all of that? I was going to say it would be cool to have some of that money back, but it was a great experience, some of the losses that I dumped. Plus, I would say this. Investing in ideas is one thing. Investing in pyramid schemes, I'd stay away from that.
Yeah. When was the last pyramid you got in?
A while ago.
A while ago, yeah. You know, I was introduced to the concept of a pyramid scheme.
Now, when to be clear, by the way, I'm talking about a pure, like, I'm not talking about multi-level marketing.
That
I've done
a pyramid.
I know. But at least multi-level marketing, in my experience, and I have some experience in it, I've done it a couple times where... There, if you are moving product, at least there's a tangible sales element. I'm talking about pure pyramid schemes as they relate to money. I've done that.
But are you a contemporary of Bernie Madoff? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
But when I was a younger, man, I did it once in Vancouver, once in Calgary, where I got into a pyramid scheme for money. It's one thing if, and here's the thing. Don't do it, but if you ever do it, you know, you've got to get in early.
Yeah, so I'm in
the people that get in early get their money out.
Yeah, so I'm in university, and this guy knocks on the door that I know socially, and he's got a pyramid gig for booze, right? So, you know, you give the guy at the top of the pyramid so many bottles of scotch or whatever it is. And I looked at it, and I said, mathematically, it doesn't work. He says, what do you mean? Of course it works. And I said, no, it's based on an ever-expanding pyramid of contributors. I said, it's mathematically impossible. I studied math to grade 17, you know what I mean, through through high school, university, graduate school. I know something about, you know, geometric growth, right? So I looked at it, and I took a blank piece of paper, and I put my head on the top, my name on the top of the paper, and I made another line. I said, you put your name there and give me 12 bottles of booze right now. And he looked at me and said, that's not how it works. I said, no, that's exactly how
Exactly
how it works.
My advice always was to people when I get asked once in a while, should I get into this scheme? I'd say, well, unless you're starting it, no. Unless you're the tip of the pyramid, because as it, and by the way, again, there are lots of multi-level marketing ventures that are successful. But when it's a pure exchange of money.
Well, it's the same thing, though, right?
Oh, like, absolutely. But you got to be at the top.
Yeah, but you know, if you're going to get into multi-level marketing, which I never advocate, it really presumes that you have excellent sales skills, right?
And well, if I may interject, the other thing it presumes is that you don't mind being a douchebag to all your friends.
Yeah.
You really have to be willing, and that's what most people fail at it, is you have to be willing to, you know, work your warm line, which is basically annoy family and friends to buy your soap or whatever the cream or the protein supplement.
Diet system.
Right. So, I always look at those and say, if you're going to depend on your family and friends to build a business, abandon hope.
Yeah,
I mean, look at how much business you do right now with your family and friends, and you would say, my God, I'd starve. I couldn't feed Stan with the money they give me. So why would you go out there and do it? And there are many, many models just like it, and I always say, be careful that you're just not recruiting to your family and friends for someone else's benefit and not yours.
Well, that's usually how it works.
Yeah.
That is it. You know, people talk about successful MLMs. You know, some of the more famous ones through history are like Amway, and then there's the vitamins, and then most recently there's a company called Isagenics.
Yes. I don't know them, but...
Well, you know, and how it's built is, it's sort of built in a way that is, you have to be able to go to your family and friends and say, hey, buy my protein shakes.
Right.
And then you presume that one of them will get interested. You know, it's the 80-20 rule, you know, to 80% of your your churn comes from 20% of the people you know. But my problem was, and this goes back to ex-wife Randy, she had a friend. And,
she had a friend.
This is years ago. We moved to Toronto. This is when I first started working with Fred, and she was selling water filters.
I remember that.
The water filter scheme.
You tried to sell it to me, and I said, no.
I
said, and you kept telling me it'll take the chlorine out of your water. And I said, no, I'm happy with my water with the chlorine. No, Lou, you don't understand.
So I buy $5,000 worth of water filters.
How many do you have left?
Well, I had them for years. 5,000, whatever that was. I had 20 of them, whatever it was. And I had to go and do this demo. I went to his place. I went to Fred's place. I sold 2 water filters, one to myself. And can you guess which friend of mine bought the other?
Oh, that's a good question. It wasn't
you know
me.
Him. We all know him.
Fred?
No. Fred.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Fred and Lou would be the last guys to buy the water filter.
Because I like we chlorine know, in my
exactly.
water.
Lou was like, Lou, I had my whole spiel. I had the testing kit. He's like, Howard, I love chlorine. Can you get me a filter that gives me extra chlorine? The only person to buy a filter from me was our boy Dan.
Oh,
sweet Dan. I think they were like $300. Mm-hmm. This was before everyone was buying. It made sense. The point is, so after I sold a total of 2, I had these filters in my basement for years to come. Because as I said, and my ex and I used to laugh about it, is because we just couldn't pull off the sales pitch. Hi, we happen to be in your neighborhood. Would you like us to demonstrate our water filters? I'm not that guy.
Well, you're busy too, right? I mean,
yeah, I was
you know,
doing a show.
Right.
And
well, that, you know, is, you know, people think that, you know, what you do here on Humble and Fred Radio and Funny 820 is, 2 hours. No, it's all consuming. I can see it. I get here in the middle of the night trying to avoid the skunks in your neighborhood, and you're banging away. Looking what you're looking.
No,
at
no,
me
I'm
like,
just laughing because of the skunks. I am
like skunk paranoid, and I'll tell you why. Father's Day comes around. Linda, my wife and daughter Madeline, give me a Fitbit.
Yeah.
So my schedule was all about using time, right? Mm-hmm. So I said, well, I'm up in the middle of the night anyway, so I'd go get some steps in until I run into, like, skunks everywhere, right? They're nocturnal animals.
Sure.
Oh, imagine the horror of Stinky Daddy coming home.
Did you get skunked?
No. But I know how horrible the smell is.
Anyway, you were saying about coming here in the middle of the night, we're banging away.
Right. So it's
I got
a full
no time for filter sales.
I know.
I got none of that time.
Yeah, there's that. And, I think that if you look at the model, if we have time, I can explain to you MLM.
Well, sure, you got. I'll tell you what we got to do. We just got started. This is Lou Skeezes. He's filling in for Fred. We got about 120 seconds before we take our first break. Can you do it in 60 seconds?
MLMs are all driven by people in transition. So people have lost their jobs, they're hoping to get something going, mm-hmm. and then somebody puts a hook in them and gives them a bunch of water filters. Right? And they cough.
Yes, theoretically, yes.
And skin some cash out
yes,
of
yes, $5,000, whatever.
So it's all about transition. And so you have to be aware that you could be vulnerable, like
yes.
me right now, in transition from what I was doing before. I could be a target for somebody with a pitch. However, having fouled off a ton of those over a lifetime, I'm not really that susceptible.
Well, there you have it. Lou Skeezes, Happy Capitalism is here, at Lou Skeezes on Twitter. And here's how you spell it, S-C-H-I-Z-A-S. Last time you were here, I was sort of scrambling around. All of a sudden, I saw your name on our social media. I'm like, guys, that isn't even close.
Well, no, it was close enough.
Well, close. Yeah, a couple of them were close.
Yeah.
I think I saw SKIZZ.
Anyway, so close.
Skeezes is here. We're going to talk some weed. We're getting ready to last a legal day. And I'm not 100% sure how comfortable Louie Boy is going to be discussing past associations, but let's talk about the future. Our community, I got to make sure I get this right, because she is, it's a great, the community manager and patient liaison director of Strain Print, our friends that put people together with great relief strainprint.ca. She's going to join us after 8 o'clock Eastern. It's Humble and Fred Radio on Funny 820 and at humbleandfredradio.com.
While gambling, that's all in the past. Zen.
This is the best of Humble and Fred, brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Paytm, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Strain Print.
Welcome to the land of Humble and Fred, where Tuesdays are sacrificed by Unicorn Day. I know that sounds cruel, but if you've ever had a nice piece of unicorn just done with a nice sauce, you know, oh, it's really tasty. The legendary Humble and Fred Radio, Canada's national morning show.
I'm gonna need somebody's king.
1-833-437-8465. 1-833-HF-STINK. You have no idea how many days, even weeks, we spent trying to get fart into a phone number. I always wonder, on those days, Phil, when we were having the 1-800-FART phone call discussions, and we'd be sitting around here brainstorming, and I thought, what are real grown-ups doing today? What is the vice president of a company? Lou Skies is in for Fred. Look at Lou. Look at him.
All right. Glad to be here. Fun abounds.
This program is baked to fresh every day, brought to you by some very fine folks. Phil, what about Spearhead Brewing Company?
Yes, Spearhead Brewing Company, located in Kingston, makes its award-winning Hawaiian Pale Ale all year round. This bold 6% West Coast Pale Ale is brewed Hawaiian style with pineapple. It is naturally carbonated, unfiltered, dry hopped to provide a delicate carbonation and complex flavor. This perfectly imbalanced pale ale has a fresh, citrusy character with hints of tropical fruit, zest and pine, and a refreshingly dry finish. You know, Spearhead Brewing, the good old pineapple folks.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Well done. Interesting to hear a man talk about beer who's never had one. Have you ever had a beer?
Well, obviously, yes. And I've had a Spearhead, actually.
Have you really?
Yeah, I took one home. The Hawaiian Pale Ale.
Like, when you go home on the weekends, are you just, like, doing, like, what do they call that where you take your... You pierce the beer and then just shoot it into your mouth. Is that what is that called?
Shotgun.
I would love that. I'd love that idea of Phil all buttoned down here and everything, and then he goes home and he's just shotgunning spearheads. What's that? Phil, maybe tomorrow when marijuana is legal, maybe you'll shotgun a spearhead for us. I'll tell you what, if you want great information, Tim Niblett's your guy. He's a portfolio manager. Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. And some market volatility there at the end of last week. How has the market been this week?
The market has been moving sideways, trying to find a new bottom to move up ahead. But, you know, I've been getting a lot of calls, Humble, about market activity, people holding on to their portfolios. What should I do? And I always say, go to a pro. I'll give you my opinion, but I can't do anything for you.
That's right. Well, there you are. And here's the thing. Skeezes knows more than all of us, and then some. And even he's saying, make sure you use a guy like Tim Niblett. You know, a lot of people, and Tim talked about this recently. You know, unless you're... You used to be. Were you ever a designated broker?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm a chartered investment manager.
There you go. Okay. So unless you're
and a fellow of the Canadian Securities Institute,
unless you're a fellow or fellow woman, I don't see gender. Unless you have that designation after your name, make sure you get someone like Tim Niblett to figure out this stuff for you, because that's not your thing. My thing is losing money in pyramid schemes, and Tim's thing is making sure I keep it. Sean, come on over and say hi to Lou Skeezes, for God's sake.
Hey, Sean. Good to see you. Sarge.
The legendary Lou. Hello. Hello, everybody.
This is my favorite part, where Sean comes in and he presents a story, and I ask him. My favorite is I'll say, hey, Sean, what's your story? He'll give us like a couple of lines, and I'll ask him a follow-up question, and I get nothing. But this one, I'm pretty sure we can all help
jump
Sean.
On.
Exactly. Sean, the headline is...
I don't have this one for today, but you wanted me to talk about this because this is great.
The naked guy.
Yeah, the naked guy.
You don't have this today?
I just kind of assumed we were going to talk about it, but
all right, well, the headline is the guy swims naked.
Yeah. Jumped into the Ripley's Aquarium twice.
Where was security?
Well, here's the thing. Security, if you look at the video, it's stunning. The security guy is getting him to get out of the aquarium pool, and the guy starts to get out of the pool, and he just goes, nope! And he dives back in.
So this was during Friday night. They have jazz nights or something like that every... once or twice a month. I don't know how often.
That isn't even important.
No, it's not even.
That detail?
It's kind of funny, though.
That they had jazz? Yeah, well, every 2 weeks they have a jazz night, and they had all these people having cocktails and soft music playing in the background.
Diana Cross.
And then
romantic.
All of a sudden, this dude comes over, takes off all his clothes. And this video has gone around the world, buck naked, and dives into the swim with the sharks.
Stingrays below him, everything, just swimming away. And he's
so are these like sharks that have been declawed, detoothed, you know? I mean,
no.
You would think, or I guess they were well fed, right?
Yeah, they're meant for...
I mean, here's meat.
They're meant for the natural sea and ocean conditions. They're not meant to be in captivity, so these are your average sharks, average stingray.
Yeah, that's one of the first things I think everyone would think of is why didn't they attack him? And maybe because aquarium sharks are kind of like,
I'm going to get fed.
Tired. You know,
lunch
it's a lot of work. No, seriously, the sharks are kind of like, hey, there's a dude in the water. Should we eat him? And the other guy's like, we're going to get a...
we're going to get tuna.
We're like a half an hour away from nice
We're
going to
get some penguins.
If we eat him, now we got to pull him apart.
Human sashimi.
It's so much work.
So another part
They're
of this story.
They're lazy-ass sharks in the aquarium.
Oh, totally. Another part of this story, though, even better, is... Well, adding to the story, there was an update this morning. He assaulted a guy outside of Medieval Times. He got kicked out of Medieval Times around 8 p.m. that night, and that was before he ended up going to jump in Ripley's Aquarium.
Okay, just hold that. Okay.
Now, he's from Nelson, B.C.
Oh, this is, yeah, I've got a, just this morning as I was looking, the update is his name is David Weaver. And I love how this reportedly took a swim Friday with deadly sharks. Reportedly.
Allegedly.
But let's just break this down a bit. He goes to Medieval Times. Now, if you can't have a good time, then, you know, like what? And by the way, the show couldn't have, it must have just started. He gets into a fist fight, an altercation with somebody. He's like, and then thinks, okay, now what can I do?
Oh, wait, sorry. He got kicked out of the show for being belligerently drunk and then went back, tried to get back in, broke two glass doors or something outside of Medieval Times and assaulted a guy having a smoke outside. It wasn't even inside the Medieval Times that all this happened.
So he's thinking, okay, I got kicked out of Medieval Times. The exhibition isn't on. What should I do? Now I could go to the CN Tower or I could go to He went to the aquarium on a strip where there's more than, you know, there's a few people milling about on a Friday night. And do they know if he paid to get into the aquarium? He must have.
I don't have that detail, but it just, how do you get even on the deck of the aquarium? Because Like, that's fully blocked off access, doors, staff only, keypad access. You just find somebody with a door cracked open just a little bit and manage to, oh, there's the water. Let's hop in.
the fact that he's from Nelson, B.C., I've been to Nelson. Anybody else been to Nelson?
I have,
The queen city of the Kootenays. That's a wild tribe that populates that space, okay? Everybody I know from Nelson, believe me, that behavior, he would be like the minister on Sunday.
That's right.
Okay?
He's the mayor of, turns out he's the mayor of Nelson, B.C.
It's the last valley of the hippie chick. And believe me, you know, legalized marijuana came to Nelson.
Yeah, years ago. I love the CBC witness says the guy seemed totally relaxed and there were sharks like everywhere. Yeah, because it was a shark tank. He appeared to be totally nude and like laughing because he's from Nelson, B.C. And they're like, yeah, whatever. I live with a shark. So that's good, Sean.
Good. Off the bucket list for sure.
Self-medicated, I would say.
The story that I did want to have Sean present. It's one of those things that, you know, there's a lot to want for when it comes to social media. And then there's some things that have, you know, that are breakthroughs for people. For instance, this particular story.
This particular story is the decline of Tony the Tiger on Twitter.
Yeah. Tony the Tiger was being harassed. He's a tiger, you know.
And, I know Tony.
Yeah, Tony's
a tiger. I grew up with him.
We all did. He's great.
So a little over 2 years ago on the Twitter page, fans were of the Twitter Real Tony Tiger, at Real Tony Tiger, were noticing that in the comment section below what he was saying.
That's right.
Got a little bit
sexy.
Sexy.
Got sexy.
Horny and there were excessive.
Guys, explain, there's a group of guys, I'm assuming they're guys.
Yes.
Women are way beyond this crap. There's a group of men that identify, they call themselves furries.
Yeah, I've seen that. Trend.
We all have.
So there, it's a mascot oriented.
Yeah, they love. They get aroused.
Costumes.
By.
Yeah. No, I know the furry movement.
Yeah.
You know, they're not out there in City Hall complaining about anything. They just want somebody to fur with.
They just want to rub up against furry things.
Well, they
carpets,
made it.
I think.
They
carpets.
Made it pretty evident on this page that they really liked Tony the Tiger.
Loved him.
They really wanted many things frosted and all the daddy jokes you can come up with.
They wanted many things frosted.
Not just...
So they shut down Tony the Tiger's Twitter account because it was being overrun with furries.
And this is just in the last 2 months. Yeah. It's kind of...
The reason I said that about social media is, you know, and I've used this example before, years ago when Uncle Lou and I were young men, you know, and there might be a man, and it was always a guy, usually a white guy. There was a guy in your neighborhood that, you know, had odd behavior. Oh, that's just Sam. You know, he likes to dress like a baby, you know, or one of those things. You know, one of those, there was always the creepy guy in the neighborhood. And you just didn't think much about it. But see, with the internet and the age of social media, that guy can show up at the convention center and there's 800 other men mm-hmm. dressed like babies.
Yeah.
So the furry community might have been in the closet for a long time. But they're out now. And they're everywhere.
Yeah, I'm not offended by it. I mean, you know, what you do when I'm not around is none of my business.
Absolutely.
Right? As long as it's with consenting adults, everybody is signed off. You know, the requirement now that you have a release. Oh, you'd like to get involved with me in some way? Here, sign the release.
Yeah.
That way my lawyer can say, well, I've got a release here. You it said says it here was that, okay.
It says here that you wanted to breastfeed, you 58-year-old man. Do you have anything else? Are there other details?
Oh, that's pretty much everything. I was going to get into some actual Twitter.
Go ahead.
They're pretty well.
You
Frost my flakes,
now, right?
Daddy. Of
remember,
course.
Remember, we're on terrestrial.
Of course,
radio
I got to keep it safe. You know?
You make me whole wheat again.
Oh, it's
Phil. Phil's just feels like
he's released.
He's like he's like become this Asian Jewish joke writer. That you'll make me whole wheat. go ahead. What's your name again, Sean?
Sarge.
Well, a lot of them got deleted, but it was
fill me one.
I'll fill me up with your frosted flakes, Tony. Right. Please put your whiskers in my. There's a lot of
okay.
you know, got a little racy, but, so they had to delete them. But
thank you. And what this has given us is given us a discussion. And you're right, you know, like, if whatever you need to get aroused, excited, whatever your thing is, it doesn't involve me or my family or my dog. Yeah. Like, I don't want to come in here one morning and you, Phil and Stan, are locked in some kind of weird...
It's love.
69 thing going on. I mean, unless Stan agrees... But, yeah, it really has...
That's why you have to have the release form. Yes.
The computing machine really has opened up a whole world to connect with others...
Of similar ilk.
Of similar proclivities.
Yeah. I'm not offended by that. Like I said, as long as nobody's getting hurt and it's consenting adults, I think, you know, fill your boots. But, you know, what you do when I'm not around is none of my business unless you make it my business.
Right.
Right? I may not like your action if it's in my space, in my face. You know what I'm saying?
I was doing Yuck Yucks on Saturday night with one of my favorite comics, a guy named Tim Steeves. And he's a guy who wrote for the Rick Mercer Report, This Hour Has 22 Minutes, years and years. One of the head writers. Very, very funny guy. And he's... talking about getting a bit older, you know, he's a couple years younger than us, but still mid-50s, early 50s.
Oh, he has baby.
Yes, his joke. He said, I'm so lazy now, I don't want to leave the house, because if I leave the house and I... He says, when you're in your own home and you lose your phone, it's just a couple of, I was at the fridge, I went over here. Right. He said, I'm so lazy now, I do kind of a reverse Peeping Tom thing where I basically just stay in my house and play with myself as people walk by. But, you know, whatever you're doing in your own home, that's your business.
Yeah. Now, I would say that you'd want to have at least, you know, one of those little, what do they call it, cafe curtains?
Sure.
You know?
Oh, no, he's not standing. He's not standing there full on. He said, no, he says, all you see is my head in the window. Just anyway. Speaking of Yuck Yucks, I'll be there again Saturday night. Friday night, I'll be in... where am I? Hockley Valley.
Wow. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Fancy.
Out of town.
Thursday night, I was going to be opening up for Derek Sagan at the Rose Theater in Brampton. That show has now been sadly canceled. I know. And tomorrow, I'm going to be on something called... It's from a company called the Midas Letter Media Corp. Yeah. And I'm doing a show. This guy does it. His name is James West. And I'm going to be on his online sort of interview program tomorrow, talking weed at 10:30 Eastern time.
It's a financial.
Yeah, it's a financial thing. But he, for some reason, asked me to come on and talk about the cannabis, you know, and an area that I've certainly been studying my whole life.
Well, you know, I tell you a story about cannabis derivatives. You know, one of my friends, her mother. In her 80s, you know, was, you know, ambulatory, getting around on her own. Knee gives out on her. She's on a cane, and she starts taking hemp oil, throws the cane away.
Yeah.
Wow.
My sister had a big, you know, those big black braces on her knee, and she had a hitch in her gait and all that. And I said, what's the matter? Oh, my knee. I said, well, you know, Linda's mother did okay with this. Try it. She threw the brace away. So... you know, the science and the molecules coming out of that plant could be incredibly beneficial.
Well, that's what we always talk about with our friends at strainprint.ca. We're going to speak to Ashley in a couple minutes' time, but it's interesting you say that because, you know, there's a perception, and it's I think it's ill-gotten in terms of that tomorrow all of a sudden it says everyone's going to be lighting up spliffs. No one's smoking. Somebody called it doobies the other day. I said, no one's smoking doobies anymore. I said, the real revolution of the cannabis legalization isn't getting high. It's that.
It's the science.
It's the science of cannabinoids. It's the science of CBD. It's the way it interacts with your natural natural healing molecules. And the revolution is going to be when you walk into a Shopper's Drug Mart. Sometime in the next 6 months, and there's going to be a whole section of what you're talking about. CBD tinctures, salves, salves, balms, and oils that will have no THC associated with
them. No get high.
Because the real big, the pharmaceutical big play here is that. It's not because we can all get weed. It's that kind of extracting the therapeutic benefits. That's the real revolution.
Yeah, absolutely, Howard. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I've been in a room with a doctor who, you know, they tell you this, that, and the other thing about your health. And then you ask them, you know, how should we proceed? And they give you the shrug. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Well, I can give you painkillers. I don't want painkillers. Mm-hmm. I want some kind of resolution of this issue. So what I've always said is when modern medicine abandons you, you've got to look for alternatives, right? You cannot live in pain or discomfort, you know, ad nauseum because they've run out of the tools. You know, go to the medicine man. Well, get some herbs.
You know, the thing is, and there's been an organic, there's been a vitamin, you know, this thing is, there's lots and lots of people that homeopathically have been treating sort of traditional maladies with non-traditional medicine. That ship is out there already.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole cohort of people that are used to using alternative medicines. But I think what's going to happen with cannabinoids and cannabis, I think what you're going to see is a group of baby boomers and, you know, sort of Gen Xers like me that are going to start looking for alternatives in that space. And unlike some, you know, one of those things you always hear, you know, the on satellite radio, you'll hear a lot of ads for, you know, vitamin therapy type base. Yeah. And they always have that. What's the disclaimer saying? You know, this has not been
evaluated by the FDA.
Thank you. It's not been evaluated. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you, if you go to StrainPrint, there are so many stories of people just that, all those stories. You know, I had inflammation on my knee. Nothing was working, and I took this, and it brought the inflammation down.
Mm-hmm. That's what we're looking for.
We're
looking for solutions.
Exactly.
And, you know, when you look at pharmaceutical products, and you ever look at the side effects of some of those pharmaceuticals, if that were ever to visit upon you at your home, some of those side effects, you'd pray to get something else going.
Well, so far I haven't seen any disclaimers for cannabis products that include anal leakage.
It's always one of my favorites.
I know. It's like I just scan everything my doctor gives me, and if I see any anal or leakage anywhere, I'm like, I'll suffer. I'm like, it's going to be sitting around all of a sudden start to seep.
And, you know, your social calendar evaporates, with one leak at a dinner party.
Where's Lou and Howard? They have some leakage. They had to leave.
He's got to be at home.
When you were looking at this sector from a financial viewpoint in the last couple of years, did you hop on?
2016, I did a deep dive on all the marijuana stocks that I could find. And at that time, Canopy Growth, I'm talking 2016, June, July, $2.70. Now, it has rocketed. All right. It hit a high yesterday at $73 a share.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a lot of opportunities, but you had to be on top of it. And you had to see that we were going to get to legalization. I think that's what the driver is right now. And the question becomes, will you get the volume of sales to justify a $73 stock?
And one of the things that, and I got Canopy, by the way, when it was 10 or 12.
Yeah, so you're deep into dough.
And I wrote it
to
the late 60s and then sold some of it, and I've kept some of it. That's one of my few success stories.
Yeah, that's good.
That was a great one.
That's a great one. A six-bagger? Come on.
But what most people didn't realize in the early days is they didn't understand that there was a pharmaceutical aspect to it, and that, you know, licensed producers were going to be producing not just bud, flower, and shatter. They were going to be producing material for the cannabinoid market.
Yeah, for the pharmaceutical.
For the pharmaceutical market.
The medical market.
Yes.
And that was the original licensing, wasn't it? When you go back, you know, most of the producers were for medical marijuana. Not for recreational, not to get high.
Absolutely.
Right?
Well,
so,
no, medical marijuana gets you high, but it gets you high with a prescription. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah,
I thought
brother.
There was a separate category.
No.
This only does that, doesn't do this.
No, medical marijuana, because I tried to get a license. And my buddy, I have a friend that has a medical marijuana prescriptive license, and he basically, it's you're allowed to buy top grade government sanctioned super buds
Yeah, with the get highs.
To get highs, yeah, baby.
Okay, I didn't know that.
I like the way you put that. The get highs.
Well, that's what it is.
I call them the get very highs. Because I'll tell you.
So that's the premium.
That's the premium.
Premium leaf.
So that was how people saw this initially. And it's quickly turned into a whole, you know, I've been to two separate conventions for the industry.
Yeah.
And
it's an industry.
It is an industry. There's every aspect to it, from people that are building out these storefronts to people that are selling at-home hydroponic kits to every other aspect of it.
Well, you're allowed as an adult to grow four plants. Now, I don't know enough about the horticulture around it. But, you know, if you were to look, I think I saw that a plant could produce somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 or 9 ounces a couple of times a year. Well, you know, that looks like enough for most people.
And I'll tell you this, having sampled, you know, when you used to make your own wine.
Yeah.
Which was very good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, not everyone, it's hit and miss with a lot of at-home wine producers.
Yeah.
But one thing about at-home marijuana production, it's all hit.
But, you know, it's
all going to get you high.
Yeah, well, that's what they've said about marijuana as opposed to alcohol. You can have a drink and not get drunk. You really can't take a hit on the get highs without getting high.
That's why I was with a young woman a few years ago. She goes, I don't think I'm getting high. I go, you don't have no choice. It's not.
It'll be imposed upon you.
I said, the medicine's in your body now.
Right. Yeah. You will be assimilated.
So I said to her, she goes, I don't think I'm getting high. I go, well, really, it's not up to you.
This is Humble and Fred.
The best of Humble and Fred, powered by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, PayTM, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Strain Print.